Anyone else? I'm sorry?
Mario Nova, EDMT.
Oh, Mario, okay. We haven't started yet, so. May 25th, 2017 meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education is called to order at 10:03. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may go into executive session for obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431-03A3 on any matter on the agenda. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Ms. Stanfield, are there any requests for changing the order of the agenda?
Madam Chair, if possible, we need to at least have considered ABC, bartending and casino, change of ownership prior to 11:30. He had has a blank page.
Okay. No problem. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also go into executive session or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by the state or federal law pursuant to ARS 38-431-03A2. Since this meeting is being recorded, I'll ask the board members and staff to introduce themselves for the record.
Rachel Pierce, Administrative Assistant.
Keith Blanchard, Deputy Director.
Glenn Tharp, Board Member.
Craig Jacob, Board Member.
Jim Dugan, Board Member.
Trish Leonard, Board Member.
Paul Mittman, Board Member.
Dick Lubke, Board Member.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, Board Member.
Terry Stanfield, Executive Director.
Frankie Schneckberg, Assistant Attorney General, attorney for the board.
Our minutes are audio recorded. So the audio recording of the April 27, 2017 meeting has been posted on the website and is the official record of the meeting. Ms. Stanfield, have you confirmed that the minutes are posted and are audible?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions? If not, may I have a motion to approve the audio recording of the April 27, 2017 meeting?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. First, we'd like to take a moment to welcome our new board member, Richard Lutke, Jr. You'd like to just give a brief little recap of yourself?
So, briefly over 34 years in the private school industry, hail from Tucson, Arizona, chairman of Pima Medical Institute, private school with 17 campuses in 8 states. Started off with Radio Shack computers 33 years ago, before there was cohort default rates. I think Claiborne Pell was probably in his 40s, I don't know. So I've been in the private school industry quite a while. Recently served as a commissioner for the accrediting agency that governs our school, known as APES, and currently also serve on the CQ board.
Thank you. Welcome aboard. We're very happy to have you. We'd also like to acknowledge two former board members for their years of service, David Walzer and Dr. Hank Rada. Dr. Rada was unable to attend today's meeting, but Mr. Walzer is present. So we would like to present Mr. Walzer with a plaque to show our appreciation for the time and expertise he provided.
Yes, I'd like to present Mr. Walzer a plaque in recognition for his dedicated service to the board for two terms he put up with us, from 2009 to 2017. Let me tell you, I valued your expertise with all the financial information. I have missed you. I will miss you. And you also were my entertainment. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. And I also appreciate your entertainment value as well as your accounting expertise.
Didn't he coin puffery?
That was Casey. Well, Casey may have coined puffery, but I believe he enjoyed that word more than anyone.
He perfected it.
Yes, and every time I use it, you do flash in my mind. Right. So you will live on.
The numbers just don't add up for me.
Oh, yes. Yes, the numbers just don't add up for me. That also is Mr. Wells' phrase. So if someone else would take on those two particular challenges for puffery, and not adding up. I would like to keep behoove if you all don't mind. Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay. So, for board discussion and possible action, we are going to need to go into an executive session. So I'm sure you are so unbelievably comfortable you don't want to get up and move, but I'm afraid you do, and you have to bring all your stuff with you. So we will pop our heads back out and let you know when you can come back. Thank you very much.
Oh, for those of you who are on the phone, I apologize. I am going to have to hang up. I'm not sure if that disconnects you or not.
It just may. Put the phone on mute.
I did that one other time, and I'm not sure that it is. That was a big miss in. So if you want, just go ahead, call back in, and you'll hear music until I dial back in. Apologize, but we need to discuss some things with legal counsel. Thank you.
Of course, thank you.
All right, we're going into executive session at 10:28. Thank you.
Okey dokey. Welcome to CenturyLink Conference. Please enter your passcode, followed by your cell phones. Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the third person to join the meeting.
Hi, this is Terry. Is it Beth and Mario who's on the line? Okay, anyone else? Okay, thank you.
I just think that PE is best.
All right, welcome back. So the next item on the agenda, item 4, a board discussion possible action. Item A, discussion and adoption of the policy statement regarding bonding requirements. Ms. Stanfill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. Our statutes allow us to impose a bond in the amount of 15% if gross tuition revenue is less than $410% if it's more than $400,000 for the non-accredited institutions. The accredited institutions. The non-accredited institutions are required to post $15,000, and the board has the latitude to impose a higher one. Based upon our discussions last week regarding a couple of the institutions, the AG and I became aware or were concerned that our statute and our rules may have a bit of a conflict, and we may have stated that gross tuition revenue was the basic of the calculation when in fact our rule allows us to consider several other items. And so to put those in a policy. We felt that it was best that the board discuss those other avenues other than financial reasons that we may wish to impose upon.
Thank you. So last month, because we were unsure of what our latitude was, it was put on the agenda this time so that we could, us in the public, have an understanding of what our latitude is, and also to have an opportunity for us to discuss what kind of things we're going to consider, and that way when schools come before us, they can have an understanding of what type of things would make it worthy of them saying could we have consideration, and which things you can ask, but, you know, no. We have a few potential ideas that the school is accredited and in good standing, that there's a significant difference between the gross tuition revenue and the net tuition revenue. That's taking into account those schools that have high scholarships. We can take into account if they have a strong composite score, if they have a strong current ratio, if they have no recent negative history with accreditation, like probation, show cause, that type of thing. We can decide if there's like a period of time, maybe, we want to say, so that people who had had a problem but have worked really hard to get past it, they were not holding against them forever. Have they had recent cash infusion, which maybe negated what the previous problems were? They have a strong retention rate, strong placement rate. So put that up to discussion, what all of you think, some things we could use to consider so that our wonderful lawyer here can go back and help us draft policy.
Madam Chair, I would suggest one other issue is no negative history with regard to investigations by the Department of Justice or Department of Education. I don't think we have that on our list, but I think it should be there.
Net, like zero?
Past 2 years? Or?
Pending?
I don't know. I would say, you know, if there was an issue that's been closed, then I would, you know, that'd be great. If there's an outstanding issue where the institution is under investigation by the department, So in my mind, it would be any current issues with the Department of Education or
OIG,
Department of Justice,
EAGs.
Any of the federal agencies that may be involved in investigations regarding.
If they were closed in a negative way, we want to take that into consideration.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Because open doesn't necessarily mean that there's a finding or something. So it can make a claim and be an investigator.
And it takes a long time to work through those if you've ever been on the table.
Maybe the nature that we would take them into consideration. So rather than saying that there's none going on, that we would have a discussion about what it is. Because sometimes the investigation is something that really wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not hard and fast and it's a consideration, I'm fine with that.
I
agree with Dr. Lack on that kind of.
Did the school need to disclose it and it would need to be discussed and we would take that into consideration in our
absolutely.
Decision?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
That's what I meant. We would take into consideration any issues that federal agencies.
Would we consider the compliance record with our board, perhaps the board? No.
That's very good. Because unfortunately, there are some schools that we know a little more intimately than we wish we did.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, do we need to more clearly define when we would look at gross tuition versus net as far as a certain percentage of the dollar amount that is discounted, such as if it's less than 25% difference, do we not look at it, or do we need to clearly define when we're going to look at net versus
I think,
gross?
In my opinion, if the school wishes to request it, we take into consideration because, you know, if we say hard pass of 25% and it's small school versus a big school, that can be a pretty big difference.
Okay.
So I guess it comes down to whether we, right off the bat, offer them lower bond or we put it based on formula and then give them the opportunity to ask for the bond to be lowered. We then have the discussion and take those things into consideration, and then we can discuss it, you know, on the public record of whether they're going to take it into account.
Which would be my concern that the school said, well, you did it for them and not for us, and we're in the same situation. That's my concern if we don't have a guideline.
Because they're all going to have probably some type of scholarship program.
Right.
Whether some do that, you know, more than others is that's a different story.
Well, some of it comes out that when you do the calculation and the formula comes up with a cap, that may already take into account, so it may not be, you know, worthy of having a conversation.
Right.
But would it be that staff would be offering low bond? It would always be that you do it by formula, and then it would be by discussion that we would offer them.
I figured half would need to be orderly. No, kind of really subjective.
So you would put in, here's what the math came up with, and if the school asked it, or if we, if one of us looked at it and said, well, that's pretty high.
Or if I would be able to identify it, and, you know, I'd put it in that, oh, there's these existing investigations, they're on notice, or they're on probation. Yeah, those would, I would identify all of those.
Okay. So as far as the accreditation, when I look at the definitions of this, so notice is obviously, notice is they may be at risk for not meeting. Probation is when they no longer meet one or more, and show, and probation can last 2 years. So it literally says probation period lasts 2 years. And show cause is, you know, you're at the end. So I don't even know if probation, I mean, I think probation has to be a consideration, but I think it also depends on the circumstances around probation. It could be that, you know, they need an assessment program needs beefing up or something that's not a showstopper.
It's a little different with the nationals, Dr. Lett, though. It's the converse of that. The show cause comes before.
Oh, interesting.
So then you can get on probation.
It will be taken into consideration rather than wording it saying negative action by a credit would be considered. That way we can have a conversation to decide how important it feels to us.
We've had most of the probation one way.
Because a lot of times it comes down to whether whatever the action is, if it seems like that would lead to us needing the bond, compared to they have a high likelihood of being able to, you know, clear that up and move on. Right?
In there lies the problem, which, you know, the last couple of years we got burned on. Because, you know, even some of these where there was a cash infusion, we thought, all right, everything's going. The next month they closed, you know. So,
well, and that's
I think we have to use some type of objective. The objective formula, which we said, but we do have to have some ability to consider a pre-established list of subjective criteria, in my mind, because it's not as black and white as it may seem. It's not like every school gets this because they're here. You got to consider a lot of those factors. So I like what's in here, maybe adding a little bit more, you know, such as it came up today.
Well, and the thing is, if we, I would like this written so it isn't a hard and fast. If we say that an example of things that may be considered, or, you know, and not limited to, so
yeah, you get
right
it.
That
right.
way,
at the end of the second page, that disclaimer will be included.
Yeah, this list is an example based on previous discussion. It's not all inclusive. The board may consider other relevant evidence pursuant to ARS 32-323 and must consider certain criteria pursuant to R-4-39-108.
And I think that takes in it, like when you go into retention rates and placement rates, the type of institution has an effect on what those are, and so you can't put a number in there.
Right.
And I don't, you know, what is strong.
And even putting the composite scores and the ratios, maybe not putting specifying what they are either, but saying that we take them into consideration so we can have discussion, and then we rely on, you know, finance.
Because they're different for accredited agencies,
right?
Right. Like what their standards are.
Exactly.
Right. Placement might be much
right.
more important for a school
the
like
school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because
your regional
yeah,
not
no
even have to talk about
no,
that.
Right.
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 Sorry, I'm having trouble with the connection. Please try again in a moment.
Brad, can you silence your phone,
no,
buddy?
I'm connected. I'm good. Thank you. Right here with
connected
you right
the conversation.
Now.
Be in the moment, please. Okay, are there any other suggestions you'd like before?
Yeah, I guess just on the last 2 points about composite score and current ratio, that if we're going to take out the number, the adjective strong
right.
is probably superfluous also. So we're going to consider the composite score. We're going to consider the current ratio.
Okay, I agree.
Just as we're considering
the perfect. That's
right.
The same issue I have with the strong retention as well.
Yeah, what the... What's one of
the... Then you have to start putting in the details. And
yeah,
the
exactly.
I think, let us kick this around a couple more times, and then we'll have a copy for you by the next meeting.
August.
And in the meantime, this board does have the statutory authority and the rule that says you can already consider these things. I think board staff just wanted a articulated policy on paper that your licensees can understand.
Right.
So that should they want to consider a reduction, or should this board to impose an increase from the floor, that you have that opportunity and that it's at least clear to the public how you're determining this. But as I said, it's in statute already. It's already in rule. This is just to be more helpful for your licenses.
And to clarify, this is for both accredited and non-accredited.
And will include
correct.
Language.
Yes.
Yes. Well, so the language.
So it's essentially giving us talking points to make sure that if we're making a decision about someone, we're not swayed by them being great orators. And they give the speech and we're like, oh, wow, that sounds fabulous. And then we miss all these important things.
Exactly.
So that make sure that we're considering everything we ought to be considering, which we would do that now. I'll keep these notes by me right now to make sure that we're asking about and considering them. But by having it listed, schools going forward, we'll know exactly what items it is that we are going to.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Because it's so odd that it came up with like three schools in last month's meeting, and it had not come up ever before.
Ever before.
I was saying the whole time I've been here, which has been a long time.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe longer. All right, then we don't have to take any action on that, so we will just move along. So item 4B was going to be a discussion on possible statutory changes, but we are going to pull it off the agenda this time, have a little more time to look into it, and hopefully we'll see it back on the agenda in August. All right, the next item on the agenda, 5, Student Tuition Recovery Fund claim filed by former ITT Technical Institute student, Mr. Blanchard.
Madam Chair, members of the State Board, there's only one claim at this meeting. It was submitted in October 2016 by Bradley Horton, who was a student at the Phoenix campus. The original claim was for $543. We were able to substantiate $362. It appears the July 2016 payment usually was a cash payment because there was no bank statement to submit to you for approval. I did discuss this with Mr. Horton and told him that if account cards are available at a later date, we could represent this for the additional $181.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. Would anyone like to present a motion?
Make a motion that we refund out of the strike fund to Bradley Horton $362.00.
Second.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Do I need to read that into the do we need to read into the record the amount of recovery claim?
It was in my motion.
I think
it was in the
motion
for the fund.
All
right.
362.
And then we're going to shuffle the agenda just a little bit to move the ABC. What's the full name here?
Bartending in the Casino.
There we go. ABC Bartending in the Casino.
ABC.
Estanco?
8D.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, ABC Bartending and Casino School has been licensed by the board since 1999. This is their fourth change of ownership for the licensee. Cosmo, Edward, and Lois Raymond previously owned the school since 2008, and sold the school to Nancy and John Barnes in October 2016. In late 2016, the Barnes and Cosmo Raymond agreed that the Barnes would do a walk away and Mr. Raymond would assume change of ownership and control of the institution again. Obviously, they are seeking the change of ownership. He also does operate a defensive driving school, which is not under our jurisdiction. Yesterday, I also said to you by email that Cosmo was able to get from the previous owners, the Barnes, the 2016 balance sheet for ABC. And here representing the institution is Cosmo Raymond, and your board member lead is Mr. Jacob.
All right, members of the school, come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you introduce yourself for the recording.
Yes. What's the question?
You could introduce yourself, please.
Oh, Cosmo Raymond. I'm the owner of ABC Bartending and Casino School, and also ABC Defensive Driving School. We are licensed by the Supreme Court, and we teach defensive driving. So, we do it all.
Okay. That is interesting, with bartender and defensive driver. It's a little conversation about the inappropriate overlap of those two things.
Got to train the Uber drivers to get you home.
Yes. Everybody laughs about that, so.
All right, Mr. Raymond, any opening statement you'd like to make about this change of ownership?
No, it's just that the agreement that we had originally was if they defaulted on the note that we would get the school back. I was retired in Maui for this winter and Cape Cod in the summer, and now I'm back here in Phoenix to take over the school. They were about $500 from going out of business. And so we walked in and we did what they call a walkaway. They just left everything, refrigerators, everything. We walked in and we had to forgive them of the debt. So when we walked in there, we had a lot of issues, but we straightened them out. So.
Okay, so the big concern would be financially, you have the resources to make sure you get the business to where it needs to be operating properly so that students are serviced.
Correct. We have no debt.
Right.
So what we are also applying for is we found out that we're eligible to do the GI Bill for the casino part of the school. And we're working on that right now. And we feel because of what's going on in the valley with the new casino opening up, it should help us a lot. We actually had... six of our students get hired at the World Series of Poker. They'll do very well. In 6 weeks, they'll make about $14,000 each. So it's a good career. I mean, when you look at what they pay to come to school, like for blackjack, $699 to come to school for blackjack, 25 to 26 hours a week, if they're working in the casino, they'll make around $70,000. And that's with a high school education. A full-time dealer will make about $120. So they go in, they do their job, and they leave. So
they're all taking a new retirement.
So you don't have an enrollment agreement with you.
So they end up their return on their investment is about 3/9.
Okay.
But real quick, you're not promising those salaries.
Well, no, absolutely not.
No, we swear to everything you hold holy.
We make no promises. We just tell them what they tell us.
Our instructors. We just needed that on the recording because you just said all that stuff.
So.
Continue.
So, Mr. Raymond, do you know why they were not successful running this business? Yes, the big concern is that there's some kind of overlying problem that...
Well, the first
whether
month...
Whether it's marketing or something that just not making this operation successful, but please...
The first month... they went out and they bought new automobiles. And they told me they bought new automobiles so they could write them off. Well, I told them you have to make a profit before you write them off. 2 months into the ownership, they took a two-week vacation to Hawaii. Okay. 4 or 5 months later, they went back to the casino to work part-time, and so they were not available at the school. So the inmates were running the asylum, so
okay.
They had no control about what was going on as far as marketing and what was that was my opinion. So.
And so you're going to be doing the day-to-day operations, or do you
I
have
am.
Quality staff? I know you have a
6 days
young
a week.
Lady working with you as an administrative assistant. Okay.
Most of my instructors that I have in poker or blackjack have at least 20 years experience. They're excellent people.
Is that sustainable since you had retired in Maui and Cape Cod sound pretty awesome? Not that Phoenix is awesome.
That's what I was thinking.
it was nice, but they owed me a lot of money.
Yes.
So we took it back.
Money is money. Yes.
And you know what? I kind of missed the school, the students. So.
Okay. I have no further questions.
I assume,
no.
But anyone else have any questions?
No, ma'am.
Can I go on the record saying something here?
Certainly.
The new legislation that's being passed where if you have tuition less than $1,000 and under 40 hours, we're going to have issues, I think. I think we're going to have issues with that down the road. I've already seen it in the past. 4 years ago, we had a school. We had a guy come in from Colorado, and he opened up a bartending school. He took everybody's money, and he left. Okay, help me get him. Remember that?
Now you remember.
So I think that this is going to be an issue, and the question that people are going to ask is, why should I get a license when I have to buy a bond for only $800, but that professional insurance plus the license and all the paperwork?
Obviously that was a bill that went through. When you're marketing your school, make sure you don't use puffery in explaining the difference between you and other schools. But certainly there are, accredited schools, non-accredited schools, and nationally accredited and regionally accredited, and schools with multiple locations. Every school has their own thing that makes them feel special. And so you are welcome within the scope of the rules as a licensed school of putting forth what makes you special, and then the consumers will need to make their decision of whether they're going to go to a licensed school or not licensed school.
We're actually using that as a marketing technique that we're licensed by the state of Arizona in post-private secondary education. And we also have to be licensed if we go to the government to be part of the GI Bill.
Great.
But I'm just concerned that there's going to be a lot of issues. I know they want them,
right,
the buyer beware, but...
Right, and we are a consumer protection agency, so obviously... we want to make sure that you are following rules as a licensed school, and that being licensed is a badge of honor, and so you obviously, are welcome to use that appropriately in your advertising. And as such, I have a few questions for you. And some of this may have been how you had it before, and maybe the other folks changed it, maybe you changed it on the fly, but I have a few questions about your materials. So, in your brochure, it states that the program is 45 to 90 hours. I didn't find a 45-hour program listed. I found a 40, a 60, and a 90.
45 would be the carnival games.
Okay. But you have a 40-hour
program. Could be a typo. We can change that.
So you just want any of your marketing materials need to be accurate, so if you ensure that is corrected. And this is just a clarification for me. The brochure states that there will be no charge for extra hours.
Right.
So, as a consumer, I would read that saying, turns out I'm a little slow on the uptake, took me longer to learn, and you will keep working with me until I get it or give up.
Right. This is the way it works. Is we're not a franchise, but there are 45 schools within the country that are ABC schools, and we all kind of work together. So if you come to school here in Phoenix and you move to Chicago, you can walk into the school and say, in Chicago, here's my certificate, I got it from Phoenix, I need to have a refresher course on martinis, and also can I have the job leads for this area? So we do that. So if you don't get it, we kind of work with you. We actually trained a bartender for the state, and he had one arm.
So I just want to make sure, since that's what you're saying, that's what you're going to be held to. So if you come before the complaint committee because you cut off somebody who's having a little difficulty telling the difference between gin and vodka, we're going to say, you said in your brochure, you give us much time. So just let you know, we don't want to see you before the complaint committee. And then in your catalog, in two places, you mentioned 8-hour offerings, and I read that as if they fail a test, they have to do a minimum of 8 hours before you'll let them take the test again. Did I read that right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. There is a type one here. Ms. Stanford will pass it on to you. Your catalog questions. On page 4, you just say excessive absences, and, that is kind of broad, so it would behoove you to be a little clearer of what excessive would be, just so that we don't have a student coming in saying, I was tardy and they kicked me out, compared to she was out for 2 days and you let her come back. So it would be of you to define that. On page 7, nope, you already answered that. Page 8, this is a math issue. You say students attending 50% of the hours will be able to complete within 150% of the maximum time frame. That's not mathematically possible. So typically, if you're using 150%, it would be 66.67%. Your SAP assessment period, you don't say what it is. Are you doing it after so many weeks, days, hours? Is it completed hours, attempted hours? So if you would define that so people know exactly when you're looking at it. And since you're not accredited or under Title IV, you might want a suggestion is use elapsed time, because that way they're not coming, you know, an hour here and there, and you never get to your first evaluation period, but it's up to you. But think about that. And appeals, you say how long the students have to appeal, but not how long you do. So you need to commit on when you're going to give them an answer. And then under placement, in one place on page 9, you say contact the administrators for more information. And then farther down, you have a placement policy that clearly says you're not promising. So that feels to me like you're doing a shell game here, saying, oh, you want to finish out placement? Just call me. And then here's our official policy that says we're not promising things. So I would like to request that you change that to refer to your placement policy and then stick to your placement policy. Because if you start promising jobs, we're going to have a problem.
What we do basically is we tell them that when they finish the class, we we will give them, we call it job leads. And every Wednesday at 2 o'clock, they send us an email, and we send them a code to get into the website.
Okay. In that case, make sure in your place of policy, it tells them what the means of contacting is. But up top, you're just saying just contact administration. Okay. You're not referring to policy, so refer your policy. And honestly, I had trouble following what that policy was about sending an email. I'm like, well, he's sending me leads. Why am I sending an email? So just make it clear that people know what the heck you're asking them to do. And then there are some more typos. Again, Ms. Stanfield, we'll pass them on to you. Okay, that's all I have. Anyone else have anything?
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the supplemental license application change of ownership for ABC Bartending Casino School, with the stipulation that a $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
Second.
So we have a motion second. Any further discussion? Do you agree to the bond?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. No further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Good luck. Sorry about your retirement. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks.
Welcome
for
back
us.
To the
thank you for seeing me early.
Yeah.
No problem. Enjoy your flight. Yes, you going to Maui?
No, I'm going to Vegas. Make my donation.
Thank you.
See you, Kevin.
Relearn my lesson there, sir.
All right. The next item on the agenda is a status update for the Art Institute of Phoenix. Is there anyone here from there? Come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, Chad Williams, President, Art Institute of Phoenix.
Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. At the October 27th board meeting, the State Board entered into a consent agreement for non-disciplinary probation with AI Phoenix, requiring a $2,047,700 surety bond with reporting requirements that included the submission of student records. I believe it's on a monthly basis. They are also required to appear to you quarterly to provide to you an update, which is what this particular time period is for. Since the January meeting, the following has occurred. EDMC has announced a planned change of ownership with the Dream Center in California. They have done a reassignment and consolidation of campuses. Specifically, Phoenix is no longer the main home state, is now Minneapolis, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
As you know, ACICS deferred renewal of accreditation, continued the show cause. ACICS also withdrew the program approval for the VA in advertising and issued several program level warnings. All of these documents were provided to you in the electronic folder for the board materials. Also, the chronological summary dating back to May is part of my report, and representing the institution, of course, is Mr. Williams, and on the phone is Beth Henneke and Mario Nova.
Would you like to make a statement?
We provided written and electronic materials for review, and I'm basically here to answer any questions pertaining to the Art Institute of Phoenix, and Ms. Hinke and Mr. Novo can speak to any questions regarding EDMC or any assistance I might need.
Good morning. So the change of ownership of the Dream Center, has that is that finished, or is that still in progress, as I understand?
Still in progress. Beth, would you like to speak to that?
Sure. Hi, I'm Chief Compliance Officer for EDMC. I've been very involved in the process, so we're still waiting. All of the applications to our regional accreditors and to states that have approval, pre-close approval, all of them have been submitted. June looks to be the month where we anticipate getting, hopefully getting the regulatory approvals. So we have Northwest Commission, WAC, SAC, Middle State, HLC schools. There are four of them, four locations, two institutions. Those will not be considered by HLC until November. So those will stay with EDMC until at least November. But otherwise, we are on track. We've been talking with the Department of Education, and it still appears for what we've been saying is a summer closing. It looks like July, early August, if everything stays on track.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? So we request that they continue to come forward quarterly and provide us with updates as they occur.
Yeah.
So you'll continue to be invited to come back for us quarterly, and any updates you get from any creditor or any governing agency, you would immediately provide them to the board.
Understood.
Thank you very much for coming. Next item on the agenda, review, discussion, possible action for consideration of consent agreement, Arizona Summit Law School.
Considered the notice that the American Bar Association, that they had placed Arizona Summit on probation. After review and discussion, the board took the following action: to enter into a non-disciplinary consent agreement with the stipulations to post a surety bond in the amount of $2,976,300, to provide a contingency teach-out plan, provide student rosters monthly, electronically provide student records, and to provide all ABA documents and to appear before this board. The board also informed that the consent agreement would be sent and that the school would have 20 to 30 days to accept, reject, or request a modification. On May 17th, the board received Summit's request for reconsideration and modification to the consent agreement, which you have been provided. Also, just wanted to make the board aware that the July renewal is also coming up. It is not slated for this. Based upon what happens here, staff will determine whether we just process it as normal or if it needs to be referred to the board in August. And I will let those introduce themselves.
I'll start. Nicole Stanton, Quarles & Brady, representing Arizona Summit Law School.
Scott Thompson, Chief Financial Officer of Intula.
Joe Perez, Academic Dean at Arizona Summit.
Tom Lively, President of Arizona Summit.
Welcome.
Thank you.
This is a complicated matter, so we would like to go into executive session to seek some advice.
Madam Chair, if I may, there's some information that was not included in our response. I do have a very short statement. If I can make that before you do that, if that's appropriate and acceptable, I'd like to. Over a decade ago in 2005, Arizona Summit Law School, formerly Phoenix School of Law, entered the market with a mission: to break down barriers to entry into the practice of law by providing legal education to those students who otherwise would have been passed by. By any measure, they have succeeded. Since 2005, Summit has graduated hundreds of students who would be considered minority members of the legal profession. Not too long ago, Summit outperformed its peers with much higher quality ratings of its students for the other Arizona law schools when it came to the bar passage rate. Summit students were also outperforming significantly their own entrance indicators. Unfortunately, as the market for legal education turned severely downward and the applicant pool changed, competition for that applicant pool became more intense, and Summit made some missteps. Most importantly, they sacrificed rigor for well-intentioned but misplaced compassion. These changes were reflected in the school's bar passage rate, as you have noted. Even before the ABA put Summit on probation this March, the school had already started to implement a vigorous and well-thought-out plan to turn the tide on its performance. This plan resulted in a rigorous self-assessment that identified fundamental weaknesses in its academic program and admission process, none of which were driven by financial considerations. I will note that despite its performance on the bar pass rates, Summit students have never burdened the system of higher education with loan defaults. The school's student loan default rate is among the lowest out there, 1% being the latest number. Summit's plan to improve its performance is working. In the most recent bar pass results, Summit raised its passage rate among first-time test takers by 5%. And while it's too early to celebrate those results, they are clearly a step in the right direction and a sign of more improvement yet to come. With improvements in rigor, strategic personnel changes, and enhanced academic support, we expect to see continued improvement in future bar exam results. With a substantial uptick in admission standards beginning last fall, Summit should recapture the ability to lead the state in bar examination performance by 2019. Given other higher education collapses, Summit understands the board's concern, but urges it not to paint with a broad brush and appreciate the differences between us and other institutions. We're here today to hopefully alleviate some of your concerns. I'd like to touch on three key points, most of which are not included in the written submission. First, the consent agreement, as we noted, makes specific reference in its finding of fact to Charlotte School of Law and the troubles there. Let me be clear. Summit Law School is not Charlotte School of Law. The most critical distinction relevant to your decision-making is that Charlotte Law School was on a month-to-month program participation agreement with the U.S. Department of Education. It was that month-to-month PPA funding that was lost at Charlotte Law School. In stark contrast, Summit actually has a three-year PPA with the Department of Education, which doesn't expire until 2019. Indeed, it was just renewed last fall, when the Department of Education was well aware of Summit's bar passage rates. Additionally, while we have a strong belief that the Charlotte Department of Education action was politically motivated, the official reason that the school was given was that Charlotte did not comply with the PPA because it did not timely communicate with students the possibility of probation. From Charlotte's perspective, to communicate with students during that time with the finding of the probation being on appeal would have violated ABA protocol, and we would have been in trouble for that. At Summit, there was not an appeal of the ABA probation finding. And aware of the results in Charlotte, Summit closely complied with the requirement to communicate with students about its probationary status to avoid losing Department of Education funding. Given these very important differences between the two law schools, we continue to request that finding of fact number 6 should be stricken. Second, as I referenced above, as predicted, Summit's bar passage rates are starting to bottom out. The last group of students requiring significant remediation is nearly through the system. And if that group of students were removed from the most recent bar passage rates, Summit's performance would have been even higher at nearly 37% of first-time test takers. And importantly, and not noted in our response, Summit has never failed to meet the ultimate bar passage rate requirement, where its performance sits at over 78%. Third, given the previous 2 points, the bond and the teach-out plan serve no purpose and actually could be counterproductive insofar as they raise public concern and concern among the students. The school has no plans to shutter, and it is currently preparing for its fall incoming class. In sum, changes needed to be made at Summit. Summit recognized that and made changes. The ABA recognized that, and it has held Summit accountable. Those changes are working, and Summit is fully complying with the ABA. Summit continues to be among the highest of second-tier law schools for placement and starting salaries. Its mission of serving un- and underrepresented groups of aspiring law students is continuing. The school plays a very important role in diversifying the nation's least diverse white-collar profession. In a state where 40% of the population is minority and only 8% of the lawyers are, we appreciate your consideration of our position and urge you to adopt the changes that we requested in our written request. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could explain one thing that you probably may have noticed. Our initial consent agreement for the bond amount was $2.9 million. That was based upon the 2015 audit, and then we just received not too long during these discussions, and Ms. Eckford and I spoke with Ms. Stanton, the 2016 audit came in, and that's why we redid the calculation that went down from 2.9 to 2. Just so you know why there's the difference.
It's still a GTR.
Yeah, it's still a gross tuition revenue.
Correct.
Well, but let me clarify. And you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
On the financials, it says revenue net of scholarships. So I'm assuming scholarships have been taken out of that or have been taken into account. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So that means actually without the board giving them the exception, the way that the bench is presented, that was already factored in.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we'd like to go to the executive session. So once again, get your exercise today. Everybody up. Bring your things with you.
Whoever's left on the line, there probably isn't anyone. Beth and Mario? I will be hanging out. I'll call back in just in case someone wishes to call in later.
And at
11:13.
At 11:45.
Where's the celebration? So they might be paying their students
their cash payments and private loans.
So if a student leaves because they lost Title IV, would that be something for the strike? If we were the Charlotte school? Could they go after the strike if they lost and go to the school?
No.
School has to go to the
Do you want us back up here?
Sure.
Something
happened either in the class.
Okay.
You haven't lost your place in line. So, Don, how you been?
I've been good. Hey, thank you.
We brought you back to the reunion tour today, probably.
Yeah. I know.
You weren't here for the only part of the meeting. I was looking at that empty chair.
No, I was here and I left and came back and went up and checked messages. You in Florida most of the time?
No, but I still have address there. My wife.
Oh.
My wife has a small business, so we go back.
Oh, okay. Okay.
My main objective in life is to maximize frequent flyer miles. And that I've been very successful at.
That's good. It's expensive to fly. So is Dean Willich going to become the regular dean, or is she still interim?
Well, she's interim, but we are in the early stages of Dean Cage.
Oh, okay. Doing national search?
Yeah. And then, just between you and me, don't share this with anyone. I think she's a very strong candidate.
Is she?
Yeah.
She's a nice lady.
Yeah, and she's...
She's got a heck of a background, too. Yeah, she's got a great background as
yeah.
well.
Well, she was the second person I hired when I was here the first time.
Really?
Welcome to CenturyLink Conference.
Well, I won't call her later
Please
and tell her.
Please enter your passcode, followed by the pound or half.
Yeah.
Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the first person to join the meeting. The line will be silent until another person joins.
So you're it?
From an hourly perspective, that might be something different. 10 to 11 hour days.
That's how I look.
There's no better. How is it? You're getting really good teams as well as the director teams.
That's good news.
Right. Here we go.
All right, and we are back in session at 11:48. And before we start, sometimes these meetings get a little long, and so we are going to take a break after you folks. I know you like to get up and down, but we thought we'd just wait until we're done with your case before we take a break. So the rest of you in the audience, so whenever we're done with their case, we're going to stop and take a 20-minute break. So if you want to hang out and listen to all of this and leave the 20 minutes, that's fine. If you want to leave now so you can go further to get whatever you want to get for your lunch break, feel free. Well, I don't know how long this is going to take, but whenever it ends, we're going to take a 20-minute break. Okay? All right. So, this is a somewhat complicated... I scared you away, sorry. one thing we don't want to do is to get into the huge semantics, because... it's been my experience that lawyers really like their words. And I'm not a lawyer, but I'm a regulatory person, and I really like my words, too. So I don't want to get into a huge battle of every single thing, but at the same time, I want to make sure that a reasonable compromise is made if possible. So if everyone would take a breath and understand that all of us, our idea is to protect the students. And we have on our side the history of, unfortunately, some schools that have gone under and have caused a great deal of pain for the board and the state of Arizona. So in the consent agreement, the first item that we requested a change on is under the findings of fact at page 3, item 2. It's a minor change of wording. Look, we're driving more people away. Can you imagine? that the license, whether it enables or authorizes it to operate the private post-secondary vocational degree granting education institution. Does anyone on the board have an objection to the change of the word from enable to authorizes?
No.
You first win. Woohoo! All right, and the last one number six. Personally, I'd like to have a little bit of a conversation about this. So this is the item of kind of the link between the Arizona School and the Charlotte School of Law. And that school is in fact, these are statements of fact, under the same ownership. And it is my understanding that the statement here that the Charlotte School of Law was placed on a similar probation by the ABA is a true fact. And the Department of Ed did deny Charlotte's application for recertification is apparently also a true fact. So could you explain why you don't feel these things that sound like true facts, why you believe they should not be listed under true facts?
I think, and I'll turn it over to another member here to talk about kind of the factual piece of it, about the link between the two schools. But I'm not suggesting that the facts here are not true facts. I'm suggesting that they're not relevant to our situation in terms of why a consent agreement, including the terms that you have imposed, should include a reference to Charlotte School of Law. I don't think it's relevant to the discussion
You're in
as
the
it relates
same
to
same ownership, school. Right? Or do you're saying that that's not true?
They are owned by the same people. But what I'm suggesting, as I mentioned in my opening comments, is that we are not similarly situated with regard to the various agreements that we have with regard to funding and other items, I mean, including the lease of our building.
So your money that made in Phoenix can't be swept out by the company or taken to the company?
Scott, you want to address that?
Well, we do have a treasury arrangement for the optimal use of cash where there is a cash sweep. Now, that is tracked in the financial statements through an intercompany receivable payable.
Right, right, so, as it should. Yeah, I just...
But under ABA regulations, each school has to be independently owned and operated and stand alone on its own merits. So there is that divide. And we're very, very careful to make sure that we comply with those ABA standards.
So that I understand, is it possible for your owners to take cash from your school and apply it to the other school to help them?
Well, from a cash sweep perspective, the cash does go together, but from an accounting perspective on the books, there is a record of the transaction between the school and the parent company such that the funds that are made and collected by Arizona Southern are tracked to Arizona Southern, similar for Charlotte. So they are basically independent standalone, with the exception of the cash sweep, which is really just there to not let cash sit idly and for simplicity so that we don't have chunks of cash sitting at each location.
But you still wouldn't have your money. It's still possible that you wouldn't have that money, that it would go permanently away to use for other things.
Well, I would say that it could be a two-way street. There could be money raised by InfoLaw, which would then be put in place to fund either one of the schools. But in terms of a cash perspective, there is the tracking. So the cash is swept, but it's still basically attributed to and kept with Arizona Southern Law School.
I think the point that the board members are making is that the two schools are essentially interlinked business units within the parent company.
And so, true, but with independent audited financial statements.
Independent audited financial statements, but they're still linked, and hence the reason that it is mentioned here, because of the relationship between the schools and the possibility that even though there's an accounting, that the accounting will follow GAAP, it still incurs the possibility that funds from one school would be used to support activities at another school. I mean, I think that's the rationale to your point.
And I understand the rationale. I guess when we were called here last month to appear before the board, it was for the purpose of talking about our bar passage rates and the ABA placing us on probation. The ABA placing us on probation has to do with our performance.
Summit's performance, not Charlotte's performance. And that was the reason why I understood that the consent agreement was being imposed, was because of the concern about the accrediting bodies placement of the school on probation, which but, doesn't have anything right. to but do with Charlotte.
That's part of it, yes. That absolutely, you're correct in that summation. You know, we're concerned about Arizona Summit Law School, but what we have seen repeatedly, and I know you guys think like it's double jeopardy, but our times have changed, and we've seen Arizona locations that are under some type of central ownership where the schools here were doing all right, but they were sweeping that cash to take care of some of these other problems and such like that. So also what we've seen is generally within the company, if one of the schools has problems, it's sometimes systematic that there's other issues going on, you know, following a similar trajectory. And I think we're worried that Summit Law is following the same trajectory possibly that Charlotte is, and we want to have protection in this one place, because if you guys, something happens, you guys got students who paid a lot of money, and it would wipe us out. It would wipe out the strike fund. It would, you know, bankrupt us, so to speak. And so that's why we're concerned with that. I hope that explanation makes sense.
Yeah, that's the big concern, is that InfraLaw now has two law schools on probation with the ABA, and one of them, because of the probation ABA, had their Title IV funding not recertified. And so it's the concern that that could happen very easily here because of that situation. Unless you can explain if the Charlotte situation was different, why you, as far as the operations of the Charlotte Law School versus the Phoenix one, that you could assuage our concerns as far as that won't happen, you won't get the funding pool. That's why we have this in here. This is a big concern that you have two of your entities now in accreditation trouble.
May I say, there are two very distinct facts between the situation of Charlotte and Arizona with respect to that. One is Charlotte School of Law was timely filed their renewal for a preferred participation or program participation agreement with the Department of Education. The Department of Education doesn't always get to those on a timely basis. And if they don't, they put the school traditionally on a month-to-month participation agreement. We timely filed Charlotte. It was not reviewed on a timely basis and was put on a month-to-month program participation agreement. And at the time the funding was pulled, was on a month-to-month program participation agreement. So Arizona Summit timely filed their program participation agreement, was reviewed by the Department of Education, reapproved, and is now in place until December 2019. To our knowledge, the Department of Education hasn't ever pulled Title IV funding in the middle of a participation agreement. So that's one significant difference. The second significant difference is with respect to the ABA process, a finding was passed down to Charlotte for a disclosure of basically putting up, here's the LSAT, LSAT indicator, here's the bar pass rating. Mm-hmm. And at that time, no other school in the country was required to do that. And so we appealed that to the American Bar Association with the idea of providing additional fact. And what happened during that appeal process was they came back and said, based upon your appeal, we're going to move from a disclosure to a probation. And during that time period, the reason that the Department of Education gave that the Title IV funding was pulled was because we hadn't adequately communicated to the students that probation was a possibility. ABA protocol indicates that you don't disclose that particular fact while the appeal mm-hmm. process is ongoing. In Arizona Summit, there was no appeal process. They recommended a disclosure, we accepted the disclosure, we moved forward and communicated to all of our students that probation was a certain yep. possibility. So those two things make a tremendous difference in statement of fact between what happened in Charlotte and what happened in Arizona.
Okay,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair,
to argue that Charlotte is not relative or relevant to the consideration that we have, which is our risk for the students here in Arizona. I don't think that's very accurate. I think it is relevant. It's a fact that is relevant to our discussion. And therefore, I'm not in favor of removing that as one of the findings of fact.
I would go on record for the same. I'm not in favor of removing that. I think it is a true statement of fact.
That's
right. Some bearing on this discussion, given that there is a central interlocking issue.
Great.
Okay, so I'm in agreement. Also, I was willing to be swayed by you or by other board members. And I think I understand why you feel that your sister school is in it, you know, that you shouldn't be held accountable for things that occurred at the sister school. But it is the same ownership, and even though you have a PPA that goes through 19, if you end up hitting problems meeting any of the Title IV requirements, then they, of course, can still take action, and anything with the state or accrediting gives us a three-legged stool, right? So it can cause problems. So it sounds like we are uniform in feeling that we are not comfortable in removing item 6 from the agreement. So in that case, we'll stay. The next part is on the conclusion of law. Item 3. Trying to figure out how much to read out loud since this is a
Madam Chair, I think I noted to you that I'm fine with the counter proposal to remove items 3 and 4. I think 3 is relevant, however, I am okay for negotiation's sake for removing it.
But how Mr. Eager, how is it relevant? Because
it's relevant because
I mean it is relevant, and that's why. So I'm wondering why. I guess your motivation for taking it out. It's relevant that part of our rules and standards say that you have to apply by all accreditation thing, and ABA has them on probation
because it's a catch-all. So it's redundant because fact number 5 just restates what it's pertaining to, so it neither harms nor benefits the consent agreement to repeat it. So for consent agreement's sake, I'm okay with removing it. However, if the consent agreement is not offered and or accepted and this matter is referred to a hearing, it would be reinserted. So that's just for the board's knowledge. Conclusion of law number 4, I am actually in favor of removing that completely because that is my fault. I referenced the wrong statute. I apologize. It should have actually been 3051-8, and I do apologize. So I am actually in favor of removing that as well. Once again, it is also redundant, so I don't feel the need to replace that at all at this time. It is referenced by rule in conclusion of law number 5. But once again, if this consent agreement is not offered and or accepted and this matter is referred to hearing, it would be reinserted as 3051-8.
Okay, thank you for
is
that.
Is everyone satisfied with that explanation?
I am.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so striking.
Striking
3 and 4. All right. Then in the non-disciplinary order, there are originally 1, 2. There are 6. I'll scribble it over so I can read the number. There are 6. And I would like to postpone the discussion for number 1 at the end because that's going to be more fun. And we'll go to number 2. And I would like to say, in my opinion, I'm very fond of teach-out agreements because I feel it gives protection for the students, but I also, you know, confirmed how easy that would be. Not for you to have a teach-out agreement locally here. So I personally am in favor of striking two because it would be an undue burden to attempt to do that. So anyone else have any opinion?
I concur.
So we're going to start. All right. So okay. Striking of two.
Agree.
Three, the suggestion to, instead of providing things monthly, to provide them per term. That, because you're a term-based institution, that it makes total sense to me. And I'm fine with that. Is the seventh day a difficult thing, an easy thing? That you should have a computerized system, but is it like ad drop for the period? Is that one?
So there's a period by which the ad drop date occurs, and then after that there's no changes. And so the seventh day is not a magic number. We just decided to give ourselves a week after that date to make sure that the data was accurate.
Okay, and because we get cranky if you don't do as promised, are you going to be able to do by the seventh day, or should you maybe put in something besides the seventh? Because you don't, if you promise it, you have to do it. So if you can't do it by the seventh, speak up now.
No, we can. We can run it any. We could run it any day. The seventh day is all approved and should be decided by.
It's on the recording. We don't want any.
Could we say the seventh business day? Because if the seventh day happens to fall on a weekend, I don't want to be in technical non-compliance. So
we don't want you not.
Okay.
No. All right. So
thank you.
It would then change to provide once per semester on the seventh business day following the end of each semester's ad drop period.
Concur.
And then the rest is renumbering. All right, so now let's just discuss the bond. So, as we mentioned in the last meeting, we have to learn from history. And unfortunately, we've had some very negative history occur. And in some instances, we chose to have faith based on positive things that schools were doing. Insurgent of cash, bringing in really qualified people to help them shore things up, and we didn't require bonds, and we lived to regret it in a very, very major way. So I just want to stare out there, my personal opinion, I really feel that a bond is required now, and then it would just be, if my colleagues agree with me, it would be a matter of discussion about the dollars. And so you did a lovely letter with calculations. In my house, this is called Jack Math.
But if it's what is it called?
Jack Math. That's my husband's name. well, if it costs this, and it's on sale, and I don't get that, but I get that instead, really? Mm-hmm. No. So I feel like you did Jack Math, and perhaps it's not from not an understanding of where our numbers come from. So the 10%. Was actually, you know, based on the fact that if you're a Title IV eligible school, you know, that's supposed to have more than 90% coming from Title IV, so therefore 10% of your tuition revenue was a reasonable number. And so if I'm doing the non-Jack math right here, you are saying 10% of the 10% is good enough. And that is so diluted, it has missed the point of what we're trying to do.
Well, just to correct the record, we actually provide a couple of other numbers, which is to use the gross tuition revenue, which isn't a 10% of the 10%, just using more recent figures. So the anticipated gross tuition revenue for 2017, which we are in the midst of right now, we gave you that number, and the anticipated for 2018. And those don't do that calculation that you're talking about.
Okay.
I gave you options.
Okay. So we're just going to ignore
that's fine.
The jackpot option. Okay. Then the way that our rules are written, we really have to do the math based on your last audited financials. However, we can then make adjustments. I'm looking to make sure I'm saying this right. We can make adjustments based on some valid arguments. So I am going to interpret this as saying that, yes, the number comes out to this, but in your arguments to say a lesser number, you're using this as the argument. Okay. And I believe that the original number that we had proposed at last month's ended up being adjusted down by about a third.
Went down from almost a million dollars.
So it had
been like
$3 million.
Almost
three, and
it went down to two.
I'm sorry.
No, it went down to two. I said.
Right. Yeah. So
Can I just make a clarification on that? A question is that it's my understanding that the number went from 2.9 million to 2 million because the number that the 2.9 million was based upon was a 2015 number. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Correct.
And so
then we had our and then you had 2016.
Right. We actually do have 2016 numbers, and so it's based upon that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
And then when you get your 2017 audited financials and your renewal comes in, you'll be able to actually ask if it's lower for a reduction in the bond for next renewal period based on that.
Isn't that period coming up imminently?
Well, you are in this cycle right now.
Right.
The license expires June 30th. So depending upon how this goes here, staff could renew automatically. Not automatically, but after we do all of the reviews that we do, staff could issue the renewal. Or if you wanted to come back in August and request a reduction, assuming this is cool here today, you could do that. At the next, at in August.
When will you have your financials?
Probably not for a while.
Yeah, so July 31st year end, typically it takes, you know, 90 days to get the financial statements.
So anytime after you get your audited, because
October-ish,
we have always, it's just audited numbers. I mean, those are solid, hard, fast numbers without anticipation. So whenever those would come in, I mean, so the license could go ahead and be renewed, and later, when the audit comes in, do a reconsideration of the bond.
No, I understand the process. I guess I'm just, and I'm not trying to retread the water here, but, you know, our position, of course, is that a bond isn't necessary, and so, you know, I guess I implore the board that if you impose a bond, it sends a huge message to students who are applying and the community at large as to the ability of the school to survive.
It's how would they know that information? Are you going to supply it to them?
We're not supplying that information, but this is a public...
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I mean, a lot of us that operate schools have to do bonds all the time, you know. So,
right,
and it's never came up at one in any of the schools I've run. Like, oh, I saw that you had to put this bond up, so now I'm worried about going to your school.
Well, except for if you know, if there's media attention surrounding the imposition of a bond, there's already been.
I feel like the probation has more media attention.
Yeah, the bonds.
Well, if I was a student, it'd be more to me.
Almost every school has a bond.
Oh, you feel more secure.
I feel more secure because, yeah, I'm covered.
Yeah,
if you guys go down, our fund's busted.
No, I think it's a double-edged sword, quite frankly. It's, you know, if you go down, it's almost anticipating them going down.
It's insurance.
Okay, in my opinion, this is insurance, right? So by asking for a bond, I personally, as a chairperson, feel like, oh, I'm fine with them being licensed because I feel like as a student consumer protection board, we have added a layer of protection. So it is insurance. Our absolute hope is that we do not have to draw on that bond. So having a bond gives a level of comfort. So I guess I'm confused on why you're weighing the stability of the student's comfort of knowing if something happens, they'll be able to get their tuition back, compared to the perceived, it hurts your feelings, you're worried it doesn't sound so good. You know, and I understand that nobody likes to have what they perceive as a black mark, and that, I think that's what your feeling is it's a black mark. And that's not how I feel like it as a punitive thing. I honestly feel like it's an insurance. We only have so much in the strike fund, and you guys have not paid into it, and so you don't pay into the strike fund from which any of your student claims would be paid, and you don't have a bond, so we don't have any to draw it from. So it feels very unfair to all of the other schools that they've been paying in for years in case their insurance, in case something happens to them, it would be blown. And that just does not, as a consumer protection agency, that doesn't feel right.
No, I understand, and I understand how the bond works. I'm not trying to disagree with you, except to say that the perception of the outside world, we understand what the purpose of the bond is, and that it is not a signal that the school is, you know, in jeopardy. But there will be a perception of that. And that's the only thing. So I'm not trying to disagree.
I would disagree just because almost if you sit here, and you've been here a lot, man.
Of course.
You would see almost every school we approve, one of the stipulations is what? You maintain the surety bond. Almost every school. And so I just disagree that that's going to be a thing. Right. If anything.
With Title IV schools, you know, sometimes they're asked to do a bond and it has to be kept for a short period of time, and it's just an added insurance. And honestly, I think that the negative press that you're getting is, despite the fact of the 5% increase, which is
yeah,
awesome.
Good job.
Thank you.
But is it still really low? Yes. Are you really hanging on to your glory days of when you had great numbers? And even though these numbers are not great, your previous numbers are keeping you afloat. And this 5% increase certainly gave us, comfort that you're definitely on the right track. But can you mathematically get to where you need to go within this period? No. So now you'll be given an extra 3 years to get there. Can you get there? I don't know. I haven't done the math yet. So from our perspective, I feel strongly that we need some insurance. And now it's just a matter of negotiating with you what the amount of that policy is going to be.
Sure.
I personally can't see not requiring a bond because it feels too scary for the consumers of the state. Not just your school. The fact that if your school should, hope it doesn't. If your school goes down, you're harming everybody. That's a pretty big burden.
No, I understand. And again, I wasn't disagreeing with you on that principal point. I was just disagreeing with you about the perception. We'll just agree to disagree about that.
Ultimately, there's. On the one hand, there's the optics, which you're bringing up, which we
Correct.
Understand. And then, you know, you make a point in your May 17th letter about the school's financial stability. And it sort of, the financial statements contradict the school's financial stability. Not that the school is in imminent risk, but the risk factors are there throughout the financial statements in terms of the school's current liabilities in the $500,000 range with current assets of $580,000 compared to $2.3 million in current liabilities. And so the ability to meet current obligations is a concern. You know, the 1.5 composite score is great. You're not in the zone, but it's right on the edge of dipping below the 1.5. The gainful employment figure is in the zone, so there's additional risk there. I don't know. I'm not going to go into some of the other things, but I think the risk factors are all there that when we apply them to virtually any school that comes here, a current ratio of 0.3 is sufficient enough to absolutely require a bond, and that the other considerations that you've brought up. In terms of the default rate, employment rate, for the school's history, are certainly considerations to take into account. But I have to agree with our chair in that the documentation that you presented certainly warrants a bond from a protection standpoint for the state fund. For the consumers, which is ultimately who we're here to, protect, and I would have to agree with counsel that of all of the things, I doubt that many students would even know. The prospective students would know about a surety bond.
Or a teach-out plan, which we willingly struck, and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, but I mean, I think that that the surety bond is probably something that. Outside of people who are in the field, it's probably not something that most consumers would be aware of. Of course, the ABA issue is something, you know, that's an object that you have to...
Yeah, that's something you're making you disclose.
And so, you know, I just, you know, want to go on record that requiring the surety bond, I think, is absolutely necessary. And, you know, to some of my colleagues here, this is not remotely out of the ordinary for many, if not most, of the schools who are licensed by the board.
I would just add that having done state compliance, I mean, the surety bond is a regular practice for a lot of that. So I agree. I don't see it as something outlying. And as an academic, I think the 5% increase is applauded, because that means you must have put in a lot of student support around your students. And in programs that lead to licensure certification, it's very hard. I mean, you're being measured all the time. And so for that, I want to completely applaud you. And I really hope that you keep it up, because the more you put support around your students that are earlier on in the program, the faster you're going to be able to change around those percentages. But at the same time, based on the financials, and yes, while you're Title IV eligible, that can be stopped at any time. That does not help help the students in the end. I'm also in favor of a surety bond.
And the things that are positive, like, you know, honestly, your default rate, it was so surprising that actually one of the board members said, you need to confirm that she was right about that. And so I did, as soon as I went back to the office and looked it up. And, you know, really, that is a beautiful thing. There's no way around it. And so I guess my advice to you would be, you know, toot your horn in the appropriate places, but pay your dues where it's required. So I feel strongly that we really are just here to discuss the amount of the bond, not whether we will have a bond. And obviously, this is a consent agreement if you choose to not to. So that, I guess, that's the first question. If, regardless of the dollar, if you are not going to be willing to do a bond, we can just stop right now and say, you know what, we have to go to hearing, because we can ask that. Is everyone in agreement that a bond is required?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So we can get you to lunch earlier if you're not going to be willing to discuss the possibility of a bond.
Can I ask one clarifying question? Is the concept that a bond would be required no matter what? So if the factors were different and that there was cash sitting on the balance sheet, which, you know, we could, if we, I'm not saying we were doing this, but hypothetically, if we wanted to stop the Treasury sweep, one of the reasons that the current ratio is low is because the cash is swept. So if we didn't sweep the cash, it would improve that. So you could, if you improve the current ratio, if the financial responsibility ratio was stronger, certainly we have strong career placement ratios, we have strong default ratios, we have those things. If all those indicators were stronger, would the consensus still be that a bond is necessary? It's just the amount. I'm just for clarification, for the sake of be interested.
A lot of factors are taken into account, and so right now, for doing a bond at this moment, it is what it is. But at the time of renewal, which is not very much time to do that, but, you know, going forward, are you going to be locked into a bond for the rest of your, you know, academic life? No.
Okay.
And that's actually part of the discussion we had earlier, is that because it is actually new to us to add some flexibility to the amount of the bonds. And so we want to make sure that we are all considering the proper things. And so at the August meeting, we'll be discussing more of what conclusion was come to of what factors we're going to consider. But I personally think that all of those factors all met with what, in my mind, should be taken into account. So both at the last meeting and then in rereading. And you did a very good job with what you put together here. But it didn't change my opinion of the necessity of it. But I would be happy to have my opinion changed because your outcomes changed.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that accurate, everybody?
Yeah. I think lastly, too, I don't want to give you the perception we're trying to run you into the ground or don't want. We want you to succeed. We need you in this community. But again, we're a protection board, so we need you to improve at a rapid rate. And since it's not right now, we need to take these protections. But don't for a minute think we have anything that we don't want you to succeed, because we do.
Yeah.
I would add one more thing is that, you know, we talk a lot about the 5% increase that you've had. But as you know, that takes time, and so you're going to need, you know, as you demonstrate more and more that you're continuing to do that, that does change, you know, the picture too. And so, you know, you kind of have to, you can't get it all up front. You're going to have to continue to work on that, and then as you continue to work on that, we see results that changes that picture.
To your point, obviously you recognize how much effort it takes to invite an increase of that size in that amount of time. It also takes resources, and so as the board is considering the amount of the bond to impose, whatever resources you draw away in terms of imposing a bond are resources that obviously can't be spent on other things, and we are laser focused on getting our performance up. And so
my only thing that I would say to that is don't let them sweep your budget. Keep the money that you need to support your students in your budget. You know what I'm saying? So yes, it definitely costs money, and you're definitely going to need it. But don't let your parent company take those funds away from you now.
Understood.
So where did we arrive?
We have to come up with what the math would be. For Jeff, now are you walking away from the table before we continue?
We are not. we're not agreeing to the specific amount that
exactly.
You, but we're certainly willing to hear you out. Not saying that we're going to agree to what you say, but we
your,
want to hear you out.
Your proposed bond is $1.16 million, right? And the consent agreement that we offered was $2.07 million.
Given the factors that we have on there, what's the board relatively, you know, like a $1.5 million? I mean, are we good in there?
I assume that the $11 million in net tuition revenue that you're referring to is your based on your current enrollment. So those are students who are currently enrolled. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the 2.0 reflects last year's.
Right.
And so we still have some students who are in the pipeline or who are in the 3-year program. So somewhere between the two seems like it would offer the protection for the students as a whole and for the fund as well. And so you're saying essentially split the difference.
Yeah, I'd split the difference for 1.5. Just because I'm taking into the some factors, although the what we discussed earlier, their composite score, some of the stuff, their outcome, their default rates, a lot of that stuff is very good, and you know.
Clearly, the school, you know, has a commitment to being here and being in the community and serving a really important role in the legal community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would agree with that.
Are you also comfortable with that?
I agree.
Is that 1.5?
I'm sorry, what?
1.5 is my suggestion. Knocking off that 2 million because of the factors that we see, you know. And to Dr. Mantman's point, there's still some potential students kind of.
Okay, so among the board members, we are content with 1.5. So what say you?
I think we need to discuss it.
Absolutely. Our,
as you can understand.
Do you want to step out?
Sure.
We're not kicking out or anything.
Well, we can take a lunch break and then just finish them up right after lunch.
Do you want to 20 minutes and we'll go eat our lunches?
20 minutes, or do you want 5 minutes? Or 2 minutes?
It's up to you guys.
Five? Just five.
Okay.
Okay.
Terry and Frankie, are we going to stay in here and eat lunch? Are we going to go and
next door?
Next door.
What'd you buy?
Nothing. I said bring
lunch.
I said
did you eat dinner?
I might share my leopard.
I do not. Okay. I generally never bring food.
You're the one that gets hungry.
No, I'm not really hungry. I don't eat that much.
Jack, I walked that red 10 so I have.
We haven't finished with the last one.
Meatloaf.
I know. You just threw something in a bag. Yeah, tastes better hot. Gravy than that. It does it. Does all the cold pieces of bread.
Meeting is recessed at 12:32 for to allow the school to do some deliberations. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
First, we want to thank you for the recognition in terms of the improvements on our performance. And if you could say for the record one more time that the imposition of a bond is not an unusual thing, that it's not something that should be viewed as a, you know, a negative or a punishment of the school. With that being said, while we wish the amount were lower, we will agree to the $1.5 million, and we look forward to revisiting it at the time of renewal or sooner.
The audited. We'll have to wait for the audit.
As soon as you get that,
as soon as you get I can put you on the agenda.
Great. As soon as we get that, we'll forward.
As soon as you get the audit, right.
So we look forward to
a very good decision.
Revisiting.
It was straight one.
I'll just tell you from a consumer perspective, I mean, if you just think of businesses in general, we love licensed and bonded in businesses. So it's not a negative thing. And
it's
every single one of our non-accredited institutions have bonds. So
that's
what they can do.
And you heard last month we imposed on a large publicly, you know, who's been around a really long time,
1901
as well. So.
And as I said, I understand that. I hope the outside world, you know, takes it with that spirit. So thank you.
All right. So who would like to make the motion?
Madam Chair, maybe you could.
I could. I just thought the person who came up with the number might want to be turned his back. So
I just need a motion to offer the consent agreement as amended.
Okay. I make a motion to offer the consent agreement as amended and the school to pay a $1.5 million surety bond.
Not to pay the bond, but to
obtain the bond. Post the bond. Then.
I will second that motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Nicole,
we don't have to see you for a while.
Thank you for all coming to support her since she wasn't by herself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. And we are now going to take a 20-minute break. It is 12:40. We'll be back at 1 o'clock straight up. Thank you all for coming back.
Not sure they have a choice. There's no lead or something.
It's just more discussion about the bond.
All right, the next item on the agenda is the regular degree granting license renewals for Arizona Christian University.
Ms. Diffin. Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, at your meeting last month, the board approved the 2017 regular degree granting license for Arizona Christian University with the stipulation that a surety bond be posted in the amount of $1,368,213. At the meeting, the determination of the amount of the surety was discussed at length, and ACU did request consideration in calculation of the scholarship monies. It was at that time that we basically had stated that it was based upon gross tuition revenue. After that, Ms. Eckberg and myself went back and she scoured the laws and rules, and that's why we discussed the policy statement. So we did not send out the stipulated agreement to Arizona Christian because we felt that it would be more appropriate that it be brought back before you and reconsider the bond based upon our further research of the bonding part.
All right. Would you like to make any statements?
I would. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Len Munsell, and I'm the president of Arizona Christian University. I have with me today our CFO, Tim Fisher. I'm sorry I wasn't able to attend last month due to previously planned travel. And I first want to thank you for voting to approve our license renewal at last month's meeting. I'm going to be brief because I know you had a discussion, lengthy discussion last month. The only real update since last month is that we have received approval from the Higher Learning Commission to offer fully online distance learning. Obviously a huge step for our institution, in both from the standpoint of being able to fulfill our mission much more broadly, but also from the standpoint of having another stream of revenue that we have not had up until this point. I appreciated the discussion, and I know you've had a lot of discussion this morning about the factors to take into consideration on the issue of whether to impose a surety bond, and if so, what amount to impose. And I appreciated that, and I just wanted to pull out some of the things that I heard and talk about Arizona Christian University uniquely, because it's my hope that you would consider not imposing a bond on ACU at this point. Certainly, if you were to choose to impose one, I would hope it would be based on actual revenue from students as opposed to the gross tuition revenue. But the discussion brought out a number of factors that I just want to touch on briefly in terms of the decision, which I think is completely within your discretion. I think it's a judgment call as to whether to impose a bond. It's not statutorily required in this case. But some of the factors that were discussed even this morning are especially having objective criteria, looking at the history of an institution, and several other factors. So let me just address those. Some objective facts. From a history standpoint, you're dealing with a nearly six-decade-old nonprofit institution founded in 1960 that has a very good record with this board in particular. You're dealing with an institution that has a strong composite score that has never missed ratios with the Department of Education. We're dealing with a situation where you have 1 year of negative, not 2 years, and I understand that's not dispositive, but it is an important factor, and as I understood even listening to the transcript of last month's meeting, I think as Ms. Stanfill pointed out, the practice has been typically 2 years, and I know it's in the Arizona Administrative Code as one of the factors to look at. And I think there's a good reason for that. It's because 1 year is sometimes a snapshot. In our case, we actually improved year over year in many different ways, but not necessarily on paper. And I guess I would equate it to we all look pretty good financially the week we get paid, but the week we pay the mortgage, we don't look so good. And so you don't look at just a week, you look at the overall. And that's why I think it's important that if you look at over the last 2 years, we are net positive. And we had sort of a unique situation where we had some significant pledges in the previous year, and then we had some significant pledges fulfilled in the most recent year. So that's another factor in terms of 1 year negative, not two, and the practice and history, and just even from the standpoint of our expectations coming into this. Third, it was referenced, and I addressed this in a letter that I sent to you before the previous meeting, that we are on notice with the Higher Learning Commission. I think it was Dr. Leck who pointed out that notice is not probation. Notice is an indicator that you are currently meeting all criteria for accreditation. You're not missing any of the criteria, but it is something that we take very seriously because it's sort of a warning saying you got to focus on these areas and improve them. In our case, it wasn't one particular factor. It was that there were little things sort of in each area that caused us to get met with concern, and all of those we have been aggressively working on even before the official notice designation was arrived at. We knew what the issues were. We're working hard to address them, and I believe we're going to have a very positive visit in 2018. Another factor, and I think this may be the most significant, because we all care about the students. I understand that is an important part of your role on this board, is to care for and protect the students. And you're dealing with an institution, in our case, unlike some of the other cases you've dealt with, where we have assets of about $30 million, nearly $30 million. We have total liabilities of fewer than $12 million. So when you consider the question of protection of students in a worst-case scenario, which is not going to happen, but in a worst-case scenario, our students are already going to be protected. Everyone is going to get paid. All that will happen is there will be fewer educational choices for students coming out of high school in Arizona if something bad were to happen. That's not going to happen, but at the same time, please understand that our asset base is sufficient that students at our school would be protected without the bond. But the way that it factors into our consideration is, as you know, small colleges face a lot of challenges. We've been battling through those colleges very effectively, over the last few years. But this would basically put us in the position of having to expend money that could be used. One of the issues with the Higher Learning Commission was faculty. Do we have enough faculty to serve the number of students? Because we've had substantial growth. We added two new faculty this year in part to address that. But the amount of money that we would have to expend for an insurance policy that we don't really need is going to be the equivalent of probably another full-time faculty or one and a half full-time faculty. So for a small institution, in terms of our budget, which is very tight, having this additional cost is really a significant factor. So those are all the factors that I would ask you to consider on this issue of whether to impose a bond on Arizona Christian University, which has never happened for us before. And I think for the reasons that I've described, it's not necessary, and I would really welcome your consideration of that factor. And so I thank you very much for a chance to come and address that with you today.
Yes, quickly, have you filed your update with the Department of Ed to tell them that you are going to be doing something?
Yes.
Just checking.
Yeah. I believe we have. I'm sorry, Dr. Adamson is not here. He's actually helping his mom move into a new retirement home in Nebraska. So I let me confirm that before I'm fairly certain.
You don't have to report back to us. Just okay. Make a note, because it's just sometimes people...
Those things get...
Yeah, they just beat. Discussions?
I think the notice, that's an important factor to me, because I think... notice can happen quite easily. It's the lowest thing that's a warning to institutions that are regionally accredited. They need to look at something. It isn't probation, and they have time to fix it and report back. So to me, there's a difference in those two statuses.
Their status with HLC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the original recommendation for the surety bond, which I agree with the opportunity to base it on net tuition revenue as opposed to gross tuition revenue. So I'll just say that from the outset. Part of it was based on the HLC notice. Some of the notice also had, some of them were fairly minor, we weren't faculty. Others were the, governance issues with having the Firestorm Fund being funded by the board, which to the university's credit has been paid off or paid back. And so the conflict of interest that the HLC perceived at the time no longer exists. And the other was, as you pointed out, the net loss in the 2016 fiscal year, but also the fact that I think that there was some indications of risk in the need for the Firestorm, essentially kind of like a infusion of cash that wasn't an outright donation, but had to be paid back, number one. Number two, the board's concern with very high discount rate for scholarship rate. I don't recall off the top of my head, but close to, I think, 59%. In a market where, and I fully appreciate that it's a difficult market for, you know, small, you know, independent institutions, whether for-profit or not-for-profit. But the, you know, the combination of the discount rate and then a certain degree of uncertainty moving forward with distance learning, which is, congratulations for getting that from HLC, is wonderful. And the fact that it's predicated on two contracts with Knowledge Elements and Sigsys, you know, one Sigsys, the latter being a recruiting enrollment, which takes a portion of the tuition, Knowledge Elements, which also would be splitting tuition. And so I think the concern in requiring a shared environment overall was that given where the school was, together with a high discount rate, and the fact that the future has sort of like a built-in discount built into it, because those are going to, you know, the gross tuition generated through either of those two avenues are going to have you know, additional costs outside of the institution. So those are, those were the, I think, the sum total of the considerations, as I recall, from the last, you know, from the last meeting.
Madam Chair, may I respond? Madam Chair, Dr. Nittman, I guess number one, I would note that the discount rate that Arizona Christian University employs is right at the national average for private colleges. So it's not unusual. It's not unusually high. It's obviously a huge national conversation right now that, that higher ed is having about how do you effectively recruit students. If you don't have, they've come to expect it's sort of like the sticker price when you go buy an automobile versus the, what you actually end up paying. For whatever reason, students and parents seem to prefer a higher sticker price with scholarship money being provided. And it also enables us to do additional things, obviously to give scholarships for academic success, for athletic success, for music success. So that, believe me, that's a topic of constant conversation, but it's not an unusually high discount rate as compared to the national average. And secondly, as it relates to online, which again, we've not built next year's budget based on revenue from online. There is no scholarshiping or discounting of that tuition. So in essence, you have, it's not, so the revenue share is not on top of already discounted. The revenue share sort of is in, instead of the discounting. And it just simply enables you to ramp up faster. It is a net positive, even with a revenue share agreement. It's right. Still a net positive for the school financially.
Okay. Any other discussion? I do believe that the staff's recommendation is more more accurately represents what we should impose as a bond. So the original amount of, at over $1 million has been reduced. $1.4 million almost has been reduced by better than half to $600,593. And so I don't. I think to impose no bond would be totally inconsistent with all the things that we've been doing in the past few months. And I think that the 593 is close to the right number.
Other numbers?
I would agree. My bond isn't needed.
That's it. Safe. You
agree.
Agree.
Mr. Munson, are you asking that the board consider no bond?
Yes. Madam Chair, Dr. Lepke, as I indicated, the one thing that I think differentiates us from some of the other institutions that you've been dealing with is that we have a situation where our total assets far outweigh our liabilities. And so to impose an additional cost, given, again, 1 year negative, given the fact that we have made substantial progress, but imposing additional costs is really challenging for small institutions and prevents us from serving the students that we want to serve. It costs us more money that doesn't really help them. And if the goal is to ensure that the students are going to be okay, they're going to be okay. in a worst-case scenario at Arizona Christian.
The only thing I'm struggling with, and I look at you because I do a lot of the financial reviews, is in the last case that we looked at, the assets were far below what their liabilities. And in this case, I look to you, he's saying that the assets far outweigh the liabilities. And when we talk about accreditation, noted again, having done accreditation for, 14, 13 years, to me is not a signal. To me, that's not a signal that something is terribly wrong. That it is a signal that there are some things that need attention.